Welcome back. We're here for session two of Walking with God. And we're on page two of the handout, and we'll start with some records of revelation. I drew these notes from a number of sources, so hopefully we won't overlap too much, but I think we'll have a fun time. So we read a little bit earlier about Joseph walking with God. Now we'll specifically get into the prophecies and God telling him what, actually the dreams Pharaoh had, and God telling Joseph what they meant, which led to Joseph becoming the pretty much prime minister or ruler of Egypt under Pharaoh there. So let's go to Genesis chapter 40. And Joseph will come up a number of times. Here in Genesis chapter 40 and verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt, actually this picks up right where we stopped before, because in verse 23 of the previous chapter, it says the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, but because the Lord was with him, with Joseph, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So Joseph was in the prison, in essence running the prison for the Egyptians there. And with that in mind, then we get to chapter 40, verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth. He was angry against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward. So one of Joseph's job was to take care of these Egyptian officials. Verse 5, and they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in prison. So we see this as a little different. When God comes to Solomon, he talks to him in a dream, and Solomon talks back and says, I want wisdom to be a good king, and God grants it and says, yes, I'll make you a good, give you the wisdom to be a good king and give you a lot of other things. In this case, the butler and the baker have a dream, but they don't have the interpretation of it. They don't know what it means. It's sort of like a parable or a riddle. They have no idea what it's about. And that sets the stage for Joseph getting revelation to interpret it, and then becoming the prime minister of the whole country. So, they continued a season in ward. And again, verse 5, they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker, the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning, and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sad today? What's the matter? Was your coffee cold or something? Sleep badly? What are you upset about? Verse 8, and they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph, and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot through, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place. And thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. And when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he says, I like this guy. He gives nice answers. So when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, And behold, I had three white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. Not quite as good a result. But if you're going to walk with God, and you're going to endeavor to walk by the Spirit, you can't make stuff up. You've got to wait and listen to what God says. There's that place in Jeremiah chapter... There's that place in Jeremiah chapter 32, I think, where everybody's scared of the king of Babylon, and they want to go to Egypt, and they go to Jeremiah and say, we want to go to Egypt, but you ask God, we'll do whatever you say. And God told him in 10 days. You can get it in your head in this walking with God stuff that you got to be the answer man, and you got to let everybody think you are so smart and so spiritual that you always have the answer. And if you do that, you often end up making up stuff and blaming it on God. Now, it could be that every time you ask God for something, he'll tell you. And somebody comes to you and says, I need to know what God says. And God will tell you. There are other times you may wait 10 days like Jeremiah did. There are other times where God may never tell you. There are plenty of cases in the scriptures. And there are other things like, we'll get to the famine in a few minutes in the next chapter. Why didn't God just stop the famine? Why did he say there will be 7 years of famine? I don't know. Same thing in the book of Acts. There's a big famine. You know, God tells Agabus, and Agabus tells everybody there's a famine coming, so everybody collected money to send it to the church in Jerusalem. Why didn't God just stop the famine? I don't know. There are other places where he did, you know, where it didn't rain for 3 years, and then Elijah prayed, and then all of a sudden it rained. So there's a lot of things like that that we are not the ones who decide and in control. You can read all these self-help books and, you know, get everybody excited and you know, take control of your life, and you can get the idea that you get to decide all this. Well, a lot of things you can decide about your life, but you can't tell God what to do. And you can't make something up and then blame it on God. There's nothing wrong with really working whatever it is you're into, whether it's a field of business or education or a relationship. There's nothing wrong with really working it and doing your very best. That's great. But don't confuse that with getting revelation from God and walking with God. In everything you do, you want to do your best to succeed. But when it comes to listening to God, you have to listen to God. And you have to accept what he says. If he says it once, you can pray, and if he can change it. But if God tells you something and God doesn't change it, you've got to accept that's the way it is, and you better do it. If God tells you nothing, don't make something up. I've had people come to me that want to know what God says, and God doesn't tell me. And I don't tell them God says this. I read the scriptures and say, the scriptures say this is the thing to do in general, but I can't give you specifics. You know, they'll come to me saying, I'm starving. What do I do? I say, well, God will supply your needs, and I can help you out this much myself, from me or from the fellowship. But then you're going to have to go to God and ask God to show you what to do. You know, or people come to me and they want to quit their job because they're mad about their job. Well, if God gives me revelation, I will tell them. God tells me and says it's okay to tell them, I'll tell them. Or if they talk to God and God tells them what to do, they'll know. But if not, I just give them common sense solutions. And the common sense answer is, if you don't like your job, A, try very hard to make it work anyway. B, keep your eyes open for other opportunities. That's common sense. That's not the word of the Lord. You know, that's sort of like, you know, what should I do? Fix my roof or let it drip? Well, you don't want your whole house destroyed by water damage, you fix your roof. That's common sense. Now, if God tells you something like, don't fix your roof because you're going to move in a week, well, now that's different. But the average person doesn't move in a week. And the average person, if they have a leaky roof, you better fix it. It's a big difference between common sense and revelation. And you shouldn't be discouraged if God doesn't tell you something. And you shouldn't get all cocky and overly assured if God tells you lots of things. Because God can at any moment tell you a lot. He can at any moment not. And he has his reasons. Sometimes we understand them. Sometimes we don't. So Joseph got the revelation immediately while he was talking to these guys. The guy, one first guy told him his dream. There's no indication in the scriptures that there was any delay at all. There might have been. But the indication in the scriptures is the first guy told him the dream and Joseph immediately got the revelation and told him what it meant. Second guy told him the dream. He immediately got the revelation. Jeremiah had to wait 10 days. Other people have to wait. There are times when Paul and Elijah are praying for people and it takes, you know, you're raising the dead basically. And it took time for their believing and to come through and for the revelation to come through. Elijah had to walk back and forth. You know, Paul had to pray and pray. Even one time Jesus Christ prayed for a blind man. And the guy said, I saw you man in his trees walking. He didn't get completely healed the first time. Jesus Christ went back a second time and prayed for him. Then he could see, his sight came. So this is not to be discouraging. It's to be honest about how God works with people. He will work with you in a way that's appropriate for you. He'll work with me in a way that's appropriate for me. And everybody in the body of Christ is different, and everybody has different strengths. You'll find some people have great believing for physical healing. They just are great. They get the revelation. They have the confidence. It's not because they have anything different with their Holy Spirit. They just, for some reason, have that confidence in God that they do better at that. Other people are better at being wise and patient and giving you sage advice because they operate manifestation of word of wisdom better. Other people are good at helping you with finances, you know. They just know how to believe God to make a lot of money, and they know how to show you how to make a lot of money. You know, and those are just a few examples. Other people are really good at witnessing. They will do a great job of going out and inviting people to fellowship. But then other people may not be that good at witnessing, but maybe they're better at, you know, welcoming the people to fellowship and teaching them the scriptures. Maybe that's what they're good at. Everybody has different abilities in the body of Christ. And it doesn't pay to spend a lot of time getting down on yourself because you're not good at this. And how come that guy's better at that and I'm not? Well, accept what you're good at in the body of Christ and try to do it heartily and with great love and great believing. And if you want to grow in another area, ask God to help you grow. I mean, I remember there was a time when I was first running a fellowship, which was 50 years ago, but I remember a time that I was scared to teach the scriptures. I got nervous. Not every time, but it happened a lot. So I just prayed that I could teach the scriptures boldly and confidently without worrying about it. And I got so focused on doing it that I even forgot that was a goal. And many months later, I turned around and said, wow, I'm not nervous about teaching anymore. Because I'd asked God to help me, I took every opportunity I had to speak the word, and I got over it. And there will be things like that in your life where you're just not as confident as you want. Well, you ask God to help you, and then you take every opportunity you can to grow in that area, and then you'll grow. I mean, none of us is going to end up as Jesus Christ. And we all will have certain strengths and certain roles in the body of Christ where we're really good, and we'll all have areas where we're not as good. You can read about it in the scriptures all the time. But that doesn't mean we can't grow. It doesn't mean we can't learn. We should. But Joseph obviously was walking with God, and God clearly was working in the situation, because what it ends up doing is by the end of all this working out, and we'll read some of this in the scriptures today, others you've read and you know, Joseph ends up being called before Pharaoh. He interprets Pharaoh's dream. He becomes the prime minister. It doesn't use that term, but that's what a modern term would be. A guy who runs the country for a monarch is called a prime minister. He became that. So when the famine came, and everybody in the Christ line except him, he wasn't actually in the Christ line because he wasn't the tribe of Judah, they would have all died of the famine if he hadn't controlled the food supply for that whole part of the world. So God was planning ahead to protect his people. Again, why didn't he stop the famine? I don't know. But the famine came, and God knew it was coming, and he protected them from the famine by getting Joseph to be in charge of the food supply in Egypt. And to get him in charge of the food supply, he had to be able to interpret Pharaoh's dream, which God gave Pharaoh the dream. And to get him in and see Pharaoh, he had to be able to interpret the dreams of the chief baker and the chief butler, and God gave them the dreams. So God took a nasty situation where Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery, and then his boss's wife framed him for attacking her, which he did not do, and God turned that around to great victory for God's people. And the challenge for you and me is, when we get a setback, to not think about all the bad sides of it, but think about the good sides of it. And think about, how can God turn this into a great victory? And you don't know, but you can certainly pray. And there are situations that are bad that turn into great victories. And there are situations that are bad that the situations don't turn into great victories. But you just got to forget the past and leave it behind. Because both things happen in the scriptures. Somebody does something stupid, there is damage, yet they move ahead and God blesses them. There are other times, like Joseph being in prison, where God actually turns the bad situation into a victory. So it can be either way. But the key is, look to God, listen to God, don't argue with God. If he tells you something that you don't like, you can ask him, are you sure? You could say, you can pray and see if it can turn around. But at the end of the day, if God says it and he doesn't change the revelation, that's what you need to do. Sometimes he tells you to do something, other times he just tells you what's going to happen. And that's going to happen unless you pray and the revelation changes. I've been told things that I didn't like, and I prayed and I was able to keep them off for a while. But then they did come to pass. Other things you can read about, like we'll read some in the scriptures today, people pray and the revelation changes. So, at any rate, on we go with that brief introduction again. Let's keep at it here. We were in chapter 40. So the 20? Yeah, 220. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all of his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him. And that's the way people are. Remember, Joseph said, hey, remember me when you get back to Pharaoh? Nah. Most people aren't going to do that. And I will say that this is not true without exception, but I will say the majority of people I hear griping to me about stuff they're not happy about is because some person let them down. God never lets you down, but it's some person. It's either you letting yourself down by not walking with God, or somebody that should have helped you, like in this case the chief butler, not helping Joseph. What does it say? We are the circumcision, which worship God in the Spirit, rejoice in Christ Jesus, and place no confidence in the flesh, in Philippians. Well, you place confidence in the flesh in the sense that you expect people to come through for you, you will be let down. Sooner or later, by somebody. Maybe by everybody, but somebody's going to let you down because that's the way people are. So there is an art to life where you enjoy people, you try to help them, You work with them on their level, or they are willing to be worked with, but you don't expect anymore. You expect God to bless you. If you expect, whether it's a coworker, a personal relationship, a business relationship, a client, a boss, if you expect too much out of them, you are setting yourself up to get let down. Whereas if you accept people exactly the way they are, enjoy them exactly the way they are, and then trust God to take care of you, and if the people you're working with now can't provide some things you need, pray that God will send other people that can. Because no one person or one job or one situation is going to give you everything you want. But different people will add different things to your life. And you can help different people in different ways, based on their needs and your desire and your abilities. So the fact that the chief butler didn't help Joseph is no surprise to me. But you'll also notice you don't hear Joseph complaining about it. You don't hear him griping about it. He continues to trust God, and God does come through for him. It just takes a while. So we could stop right now and just bitch about the butler and what a grumpy ingrate he was. But what good would that do? Complaining against reality rarely does any good. And the reality is, the chief butler was a typical selfish, self-centered, ungrateful person, which describes lots of the people in the world. But Joseph kept moving. All right, I digress as usual. Okay, chapter 41. And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years, so 2 more years in prison. If you wanted to get negative and grumpy, that would be a good thing to do. But there's no indication Joseph did, because if he'd gotten negative and grumpy and turned away from God, what we're about to read would not have happened. And that's ultimately the decision you've got to make. Things go bad in your life. Do you let everything fall apart and get so grumpy that you are useless? Or do you continue to focus on God so that when that day comes, when you do get the revelation and when you can help somebody, you're ready? It's the same reason I often tell people, don't get too upset if you can't help a certain person the way you'd like to, because if you get all wrapped up in that person who you cannot help, what are you going to do when somebody comes along who you can help? You'll be so distraught, upset, and distracted by the person you can't help, you won't be able to do anything for that other person. Like, look at me. I am having a wonderful time teaching you the scriptures, and I hope it's going to benefit you. And I hope others that listen to it will benefit. Well, what if the last time I tried to help somebody and they ignored my help, which happens on a fairly regular basis, I had gotten so distraught and so discouraged, so angry, and so self-pitying that I just sort of went into a spiritual or emotional hole and didn't come out? Well, I couldn't be here teaching you guys. I had to just let it go. I had to say, oh, that person doesn't want my help. That person's very ungrateful. That person is very cruel to me. All right, shake the dust off my feet and move on. Because that way I'll be ready to help the next person who I actually can help. And you have to be willing to do that. And Joseph did. Joseph went through more difficulties than most people, more difficulties than most people in the Bible, yet he always came back with a positive attitude, walking with God, confident that God would take care of him. What did he do for those 2 years? I guess he just worked in the prison. He ran the prison in behalf of the Egyptian overlords. It doesn't say what happened. I don't know. But he obviously got along and he was still walking with God, because we'll read about it. I mean, ask yourself that. What do you do when you have a crappy day, when everybody's mean to you? Do you sit around and mope and get so full of self-pity you can't function? Or do you say, oh, that's not good, but God will come through for me? And that's what you've got to decide. And it's up to you. It's up to me. And on days when we look to God, we prosper and do great. On days when we let ourselves get dragged down and full of self-pity and, you know, forget about the grace of God, then we have a lousy time. It's up to each of us. And don't you dare think that you have it worse than anybody else, because everybody does. What does it say? The same afflictions that are accomplished in you are accomplished in your brethren which are in the world? We all got crap in our lives. Some of it of our own making, because we're not perfect. Some of it from the devil getting after us. Some of it from people just being mean to us. It's going to happen in everybody's life. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to sit there and mope? Or think of an athlete. You know, any sport, any game, any night of the week, there's somebody winning and there's somebody losing. Somebody made the shot and somebody missed the shot. Somebody fouled and somebody got fouled. Somebody made it over the goal line, somebody didn't make it over the goal line. It happens all the time. But what's an athlete do? Quit the minute they lose a game? Not a good one. If it's a good athlete with a good coach and a good team, they go study what went wrong. They practice, they train, and they go back and try to do better next time. Well, we're athletes of the Spirit. And if you can't pick yourself up and move forward, you might as well just give up. And don't blame it on anybody but yourself if you do that. You have to be willing to pick yourself up, say, this went wrong. And then here's another thing. The longer you try to pin blame on somebody or something, the longer you're wasting your time. I can't think of how many times something's gone wrong in my life, and I start to say, well, is it my fault? Was it Herman's fault? Was it Betty's fault? Was it that other guy down the street who did this? Is it their fault? Why'd it go wrong? And nothing happens. You just wallow in self-pity. But then sooner or later you say, I don't care whose fault it is. It went wrong. I'm going to start praying for God to fix it. And that's when things get better. I'm going to pray that God's going to get me out of this and it's going to get better. So you got to decide, what do you want to do? Spend your life wallowing in self-pity and trying to blame people, or shaking the dust off your feet, leaving the past behind, and moving forward. And Joseph was the quintessential example of everybody treating him like crap, yet he moved forward. First it was his brothers, then it was his boss Potiphar and her wife, then it was the chief butler. In every case, he is doing a good, honest job walking with God, and in every case, they're doing something bad to him or failing to do something good for him. Yet he still moves on. So think of Joseph the next time you think everybody's against you. So you're going to think that at some point. All right. Here we go. So it came to pass, chapter 41, verse 1, at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine or cattle and fat-fleshed, and they fed in the meadow. And behold, 7 other cattle came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other cattle upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed cattle did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat cattle. So Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed. And he slept and dreamed the second time, and behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 thin ears, and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears, and Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So he had 2 dreams, both with 7 nasty things eating 7 good things. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. He sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. See, in our culture, in our governments, we have intelligence guys. They're supposed to, you know, listen into everybody's email traffic and phone calls and this and that and figure out what's going on so we know if there's a threat coming. And there's a whole infrastructure for that. Well, back then they didn't have any of that. But they had wise men and magicians and wizards, and it was sort of like a Harry Potter movie, except with the Egyptians. And I have no idea if they were at all effective, but they were on the payroll, so the king sent them and said, guys, what do these dreams mean? Well, we'll see. Then spake the chief butler, verse 8, and came to pass in the morning, the spirit was troubled. He sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler. He wasn't one of the magicians, but he was probably like serving them all coffee or tea or whatever. And he was doing his butler thing. So he was in on the meeting, and then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. Oh, dang, I was supposed to help that guy. Pharaoh was wroth, he was angry with his servants, and put me ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dreams. And there was with us a young man in Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams to each man according to his dream that he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself, because Hebrews wore beards, and the Egyptians were sort of the dandies. They had the fancy clothes and clean shaven and a lot of makeup and perfume. They had a totally different society. So, what's it say in the epistles? Become all things to all men? If you're going to go talk to the Egyptians, dress like an Egyptian. And he did. He didn't argue about it. He didn't fight. He didn't say, I love my beard. I've had it since I was a kid. Nope. They just shaved, cleaned up, put on nice Egyptian clothes, and went in there. So, verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. He shaved himself, changed his raiment, and came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I've dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee, that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, came up out of the river seven kine, fat, flesh, well-favored. They fed in the meadow. Behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored. And then he went and told the other dream. Then verse 25, Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years. The seven good years are 7 years, and the dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty years, blasted with the east wind, shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. And behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It was because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. This is where the concept that revelation given once may change, but given twice, revelation given once may change, but given twice, it's established. There's nothing in the scripture saying that's universal, but in this case, it was definitely clearly stated that the dream was stated twice, so it's established. So if God tells you something once, you can pray and ask him to change it, but if he tells you twice, I wouldn't waste your breath. We just go do what it says, or accept that it's going to happen. Now therefore, verse 33, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this man in whom the Spirit of God is? So you see, Pharaoh realized that Joseph had the Spirit of God. Same thing like the king of Babylon realized that Daniel did. He said, can we find a guy like this? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, verse 39, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And he's done pretty well. He started as a shepherd boy, 11th in a group of 12 brothers. Then he got to be a servant for the captain of the guard, but he was sort of the steward of the household. Then he was in prison, but he was sort of the trustee, the guy running the prison. Now, he's doing better. He's not a prisoner. He's not a slave. He's the... now you notice nobody bugged him. Potiphar didn't say, wait a minute, he's my slave, I own him. No, when the Pharaoh says he's the prime minister, you sort of shut up and take it. So now he's the prime minister of the whole land of Egypt, and that was the biggest, mightiest superpower in that part of the world. I'm not an expert of the history, but if there were other world powers, it might have perhaps been the Incas or the Chinese, but they were nowhere near and had no contact with the Egyptians that I'm aware of. It was long before Rome and, you know, Alexander the Great and the Babylonians and the Assyrians and all those other great powers, long before that. So he was like, it was like the only superpower around, and he was running the country. A pretty massive, massive responsibility. Let's see, where were we? Yes. Verse 41, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and he arrayed him in a vesture of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Pahanah, and gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So from the time he was, I don't know exactly, maybe 16 until 30, he had some real troubles. But then by 30, he was in pretty good shape. He had a good job. And Joseph was 30 years old, verse 46, when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And the 70th years, the earth brought forth by handfuls, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, and the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. So you see, he did have to forget his toil and his father's house. And that's what Manasseh means. It means making forgetful. There's nothing he could do about it. They were back in the land of Canaan. They had sold them into slavery. This will change later on in this record, but for now, there was nothing he could do about it. Sometimes you have to cut your losses and move ahead. I'd say he moved ahead very well. And the name of the second, verse 52, he called Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And of course, Ephraim means fruitfulness. So he had one named forgetful, and the other fruitful, because he had to forget the past, and he had to enjoy the fruitfulness that God had provided. And that's a great attitude in life when things go wrong, or you have to make a big change in your life. You need a fresh start. Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, as it says in the epistles. Well, he did. And he named his first son forgetfulness and his second son fruitfulness. What a great thing. And the 7 years of plenteousness, verse 53, that was in the land of Egypt, were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands. But in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed or grew sore in the land of Egypt, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn or grain, because that the famine was so sore in all lands. So Joseph did walk with God. God did give him the interpretations of the dreams immediately. God told him to put 20%. I mean, you have to pick a number if you're going to save for 7 years, and there was so much plenty, he only had to put 20% away each year to have enough for the 7 years of famine. And he did it. And Egypt just got more and more powerful, because that was the only place they could buy grain. Anyway, that's the butler, the baker, the candlestick maker. Well, the baker and the butler, anyway. Now let's go to 1 Kings chapter 14. You know what? You probably already figured out I'm not going to get through all these notes today. But that's okay. I'll get through many of them, and then you can have them to look up later if you want. And a lot of the records I'm not going to get to are in another class I've taught called Old Testament Believers, which is on our website. So the section starting More Who Walked with God, that's in the Old Testament Believers class. So if we end up skipping bunches of that, you can either just read the records yourself or go find the Old Testament Believers class on our website. Okay, 1 Kings 14. Because if I tried to cover all this, I'd be talking so fast and you'd be trying to listen that hard. It would be tough. 1 Kings 14 and verse 4. Okay, let's go start in verse 1. Let me see. Jeroboam must be the king of Israel, not Judah. Yeah. At that time, Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, fell sick. And Jeroboam said to his wife, "Arise, I pray thee, and disguise thyself, that thou be not known to be the wife of Jeroboam. And get thee to Shiloh. Behold, there is Ahijah the prophet, which told me that I should be king over this people. And take with thee 10 loaves and cracknels and a cruse of honey, and go to him, and he shall tell thee what shall become of the child." And Jeroboam's wife did so, and arose and went to Shiloh, and came to the house of Ahijah. But Ahijah could not see, for his eyes were set by reason of his age. And the Lord said unto Ahijah, "Behold, the wife of Jeroboam cometh to ask a thing of thee for her son, for he is sick. Thus and thus shalt thou say unto her, and it shall be when she cometh in that she shall feign or pretend herself to be another woman." So Ahijah's sitting there in his dwelling. He's old and can't see, but God is with him. He has the Spirit of God upon him. He's looking to God, and God tells him what's going on. See, this doesn't always happen. Remember when the Shunammite woman went to Elijah because her son had died? All he could tell was that she was distressed. He said, "What's wrong?" Now, later on, God told him what to do, and he ended up bringing her son back to life. But at the time, God didn't tell her. This time, God did. The reason I draw the contrast is so that you don't think that every time somebody knocks at your door, God's going to tell you who it is. Sometimes you got to look through the peephole or yell through the door or open the door to find out who's there. It might be the UPS man. It might be the your neighbor asking for a cup of sugar. Might be the first lady of whatever government you're under, like it was here. But God told him. God told him. So verse 6, "And it was so, when Ahijah heard the sound of her feet as she came in at the door, that he said, 'Come in, thou wife of Jeroboam. Why feignest thou thyself to be another? For I am sent unto thee with heavy tidings.'" And he basically says, "You know, you guys screwed up, you worship false gods, your son's going to die." And the minute she got back into her city, her son died. But Ahijah was so tuned into walking with God, and God chose to tell him, that he knew exactly what was going on. And there are times that will happen. God will just tell you and you will know. There are other times you're going to have to ask people questions and find out. That time he knew. Let's go to 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3 and verse 5. Brian and I were talking earlier today when we were having breakfast about people who like to read a script for a class. And you can do that. And there's nothing in the Bible saying you can't do that. But I could never do that because I just love to be able to digress as God puts it on my heart to help the students. And that's the way I love to teach. So if somebody else can do that effectively, that's their choice. I never have and never will teach that way. If God leads somebody else to do it, I'm not the person to say it's wrong. I just think it's wonderful to have the freedom to listen to God and not just go through a sort of an academic description, but try to make it a little more practical. So that's what I do. Anyway, 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. Let's go back to... Yeah, but it came to pass, verse 5, when Ahab was dead, that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And King Jehoram went out of Samaria at the same time and numbered all Israel. And he went and said to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I'm as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. And he said, which way shall we go up? And he answered, the way through the wilderness of Edom. And so the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom. And they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host, for the army, and the cattle, or for the cattle that followed them. The king of Israel said, alas, that the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. It's terrible. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him? So Jehoshaphat apparently didn't have the Spirit of God. God wasn't with him. But he was smart enough to listen to the prophets who did have the Spirit of God. So, is there not a prophet here of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him? And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah. Because Elijah was the prophet, and then he sort of trained Elisha, who followed him. And Jehoshaphat said, verse 12, the word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, what have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and the prophets of thy mother. Because see, the king of Israel was a great idolater, as was the king of Moab. Of the three kings, the only one that believed in the true God was Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. So Elisha said, excuse me, verse 13, unto the king of Israel, what have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and the prophets of thy mother. And the king of Israel said unto him, nay, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. And Elisha said, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. Wow. Now wait a minute. I'm sorry, it was the king of Israel, the king of Judah, and the king of Edom going against the king of Moab. And Elisha said, the only guy I care to talk to is the king of Judah. But look at this, verse 15. Now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. See, he got a little shook up. Have you ever done that? Gone to talk to people you don't like and you get a little miffed and talk a little crabby? Well, that happened to him. His job was to serve the true God. And he was confronted with a very idolatrous king of Israel who hurt God's people. And he was pretty upset. So he didn't try to talk to God when he was upset. As it's been said, the greatest cargoes in life come in over peaceful seas, quiet waters. It's good to settle down, get peaceful, get quiet in your heart. So he asked for a minstrel to come. Somebody came and played some nice, peaceful music. And then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. God was with him. He not only had the Spirit of God, but he was listening to God. So verse 15, bring me now a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, thus saith the Lord. So now he's speaking by revelation. Make this valley full of ditches, for thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain, yet that valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both you, your cattle, and your beasts. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. Oh, that was good news. They got their water, and God declared victory for them. And you shall smite every fenced city, verse 19, and every choice city, and shall fell every good tree, and stop all wells of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones. Came to pass in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, that behold, there came water by way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. And then, of course, they go ahead and win the battle. But first, Elijah had to settle down to get the revelation. And for him, it was a minstrel. For you, it might be taking a walk and speaking tongues. It might be walking back and forth. It might be tap dancing for 5 minutes. Back years ago, when I still knew how to play the violin, I'd play the violin for half an hour. I'd be able to learn how to play the violin again. But different people can do different things. And God will work with you in different ways. But do what it takes to settle down. I mean, a lot of people are good at that kind of thing. You know, go to people that like yoga classes and Eastern religions. They can sit and meditate and get all peaceful. Well, how much greater with us with being able to meditate on the word of the Lord? Not just meditating on the great universal whatever, but meditating on the truth of God's word and God's love for us. Read Psalm 1 if you're not sure. It talks about meditating on the things of God. 2 Kings chapter 4. Here we go. 2 Kings chapter 4 and verse 1. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha, saying. So they had sort of like a training program for prophets called the Sons of the Prophets. And one of the women, who was a wife of one of the sons of the prophet, cried unto Elisha, saying, Thy servant, my husband, is dead, and thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord, and the creditors come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen, to be slaves. As we've talked other times in fellowship, the bankruptcy laws were a little tougher back then. You know, today, if you have two houses, they might take one. Or do something like that if you declare bankruptcy. But back then, if you had debts you couldn't pay, they would either throw you into prison to work the debt off. If you had kids, they'd take the kids and sell them as slaves to pay off the debt. Either way, it was a pretty tough system. And Elisha said unto her, verse 2, What shall I do to thee? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? So you see, he hasn't quite gotten the revelation yet. He's doing a little bit of research here. What hast thou in the house? Now, he might have gotten revelation to ask her that. I don't know, but he hasn't spoken the word of the Lord yet. And she said, Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. Can you imagine being so destitute that your husband is dead, you're deep in debt, and the only thing you have is a bottle of corn oil? Bottle of Mazola, or whatever kind of oil you like. Probably olive oil. Nothing but a little jug of olive oil is all you have. That's pretty destitute. Yet she hasn't given up. As again, as Brian and I were saying, that woman that Elisha went to after the famine with Ahab earlier on, and she had just a little handful of meal, was going to make a meal for her and her son and die. She'd pretty well given up. She had nowhere to go until the man of God showed up. And God stretched that little handful of oil into food for many days, for all three of them. Well, this woman had somewhere to go. She went to the man of God and said, I've got nothing but a jug of oil. What should I do? And now let's see if Elisha gets the revelation and what happens. Verse 3, Then he said, now this is where the revelation's got to kick in, because what he's saying is not common sense. It's not being a clever person at avoiding debt. It's not somebody that is going to write her a check. It's none of the common sense business things you might do. This can only be by revelation. Then he said, verse 3, Go, borrow thee vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels. Borrow not a few. So Get all the pots and pans and bottles you can get from your neighbors. And when thou art come in, verse 4, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. And it came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, Bring me yet another vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more, and the oil stayed. So as long as there was another vessel to fill, the oil kept pouring. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, Go, sell the oil, and pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. So that was a great day. In the morning, she was about to lose her children and had nothing. By the end of the day, she had many, many pots of oil. She sold them, made enough money to pay off her debt, and still made enough money to pay for them to have money to live on. But Elisha started by saying, What do you have? And then God said, This is what you do with a pot of oil. And he told her. Because you don't do miracles like that without revelation. You don't do miracles by deciding, I'm a tough cookie, I'm going to do a miracle. To do the impossible, which is what the manifestation of workings of miracles is, that which is impossible in the senses realm, you need revelation. So the asking about what she had in the house could have been revelation, or more likely just common sense. If I'm going to help you, I need to know what I'm working with. Then once he found out, God said, Okay, I'm going to multiply the oil. Go get a bunch of pots and pans from the neighbors. And they did. 2 Kings chapter 5. Verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the host of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. But he was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, Would God my Lord were with the prophet that's in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his lord, saying, Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, Go to, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. Typical, going through diplomatic channels. You know, the king of Syria says, You got a prophet that can heal leprosy? Well, he must work for the king, because everybody works for the king. So I'll send a letter to the king of Israel. We'll see how that goes over. Go to, I'll send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes, he tore his mantle, and said, Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see now he seeketh a quarrel against me. Always suspicious. And it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Why did you tear your mantle? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there's a prophet in Israel. Don't worry about it. Send him my way. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. So here's Elisha in his little house. And here's this big shot with a big government entourage. Today it would be a big motorcade with limousines and motorcycles. Back then it was a bunch of chariots and guards and that kind of thing. So they went down there. Verse 10, And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall be clean. Come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. And again, this has to be revelation. You can't just declare that, just go jump in the river 7 times and you'll be fine. But Naaman doesn't like it very much. But Naaman was wroth, verse 11, and went away and said, Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord's God, strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. This guy is like what we affectionately like to call limiting God. He's deciding how it should happen and getting mad when it doesn't. The same thing can happen to you and me. We can decide what the answer to prayer should be, and then when it doesn't come to pass that way, we get mad at God and everybody. And we call around and gripe about it. I thought for sure if I prayed this would happen. Well, the scriptures say God will provide your need. It doesn't say he's going to do it with your plan A, your plan B, or your plan C. He might have plan double Z, which is exactly what you need. But you don't know that. So unless God tells you how he's going to supply your need, you have no idea. Naaman didn't know that. He assumed what Elisha would do and got mad when he didn't. He should have just said, there's a way forward. I got to jump in the river 7 times and I'll be fine. Well, let's see what happened. Verse 12, are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? And they are. They're much nicer streams than the Jordan. May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned away and went away in a rage. And his servants came near. By the way, I'm going to change from Bible to classical literature, but in classical literature, you know, if you go back to the Greek philosophers and those guys, you know what the classic human flaw is? Called hubris, which is a fancy word for pride. He had too much pride. And we can do the same thing. We can get all thinking we're so cool and we know, and if it doesn't happen our way, somebody's wrong. We shouldn't have the pride. We should have great humility. What does it say about Moses? He was the most humble man in the world. Not because he let the Israelites push him over, but because he didn't try to put his views ahead of God's. He listened to God. And he did what God told him. The meekest man upon the earth, I think it says. Well, Potiphar wasn't that way. You'd think being a leper, which was the sort of the deadly disease of the age, you'd think he would have been a little more open. But he wasn't. He went away in a rage. Verse 13, and his servants. See, often the servants are the bright ones. Have you noticed that? His servants came near and spake unto him and said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then when he said to thee, wash and be clean? Then went he down and dipped himself in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Isn't that something? And then you can read the rest of it. Gets very interesting. But the man of God didn't even come out. See, there are times where you can just sit there sipping your tea and send your servant out to give information and never even leave your chair. There are other times you've got to go get right in the middle of things. You'll see both things. Don't assume every time you get revelation it's going to be like this, but it could be. You know, there was the other time, like we talked about Elijah and the son of the Shunammite woman that died. He had to travel to her place. He had to go up. He had to pace back and forth. He had to pray about 3 times. Seemed like it took half the night, but the kid came back to life. This time, he didn't even get out of his chair. Just sent his servant out and said, go tell him to wash in the Jordan 7 times. The revelation will vary, and God has his reasons for telling you what to do. Sometimes, over time, you see it and it's obvious. Other times, you have no idea. And you won't know until the Lord returns. Now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. So don't argue with God, don't fight, just pray, get quiet, ask God what to do, and listen. And there are times the world, there's no revelation, or the revelation is, don't do anything. You know, I've had people come and ask me to pray for folks, and God just said, they're going to die. So I'll pray for them, but I won't go in there and like minister, you know, try to operate and minister gifts of healings and try to be healed in the name of Jesus Christ. I just pray for them. And it's okay to pray for them and say, you know, I hope they do well and I hope, you know, they rest well and blah, 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 blah. But if God says they're going to die, which did happen in that case, the person died, I'm not going to get all in a flutter and say, what's wrong with me? And why couldn't I operate the power of God? Because that's a revelation. You know, other times, you know, God tells me they're going to come through. So I go ahead and I pray. And if I get the revelation to minister healing, I do that. So it really varies from time to time. So much of what we're reading today boils down to simply looking to God, being confident that he loves you and he'll help you, and then just trying very hard to get peaceful and ask God what to do, and then not fighting about it. And when it doesn't work out the way you'd like, which happens sometimes, just accept it. Don't run around complaining to me and everybody else and blaming God. Just accept it. That was the revelation that time. Other times, there'll be great victory and everything will come out tremendously. So it depends on the situation. Let's talk about a very different one, 2 Kings chapter 20. Here we have Hezekiah. Yeah, Hezekiah and Joseph will come up a few different times during the weekend. 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 1. In those days, Hezekiah was sick unto death, and the prophet Isaiah, son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Now, this was after Hezekiah had been attacked by the Assyrians and prayed, and the king of Assyria had been taken away, had gone home and died, and just great victory. So after all this great victory, now he gets revelation, set your house in order, for you'll die and not live. Then he turned his face to the wall and prayed unto the Lord. Now that's another great thing. I know I've tried to make a point here today to always go to God. There are times where it's very good to talk to another believer and pray with them. It's not a bad thing. But ultimately, it's between you and God. So if God puts it on your heart to talk to another believer, go right ahead. But don't forget about God. And for God's sake, if you talk to the believer and pray, let it go. I know people who 5 years later are still complaining about somebody that did something wrong to them. And it's eating up their whole lives, because they haven't learned to leave the past behind and move on. You know, you got a problem that I can help with? Come, I'll talk to you about it. If I get revelation, I'll tell you. If not, I'll give you some good common sense advice, maybe some scriptures. We'll pray together. Then let it go. Pray and see which doors God opens. But don't continue to spend the next 5 years of your life, or even the next 5 days of your life, griping about it. Do your best to pray, ask God for help, and just move ahead. You'll have a much more successful and prosperous life. Again, look at Joseph. Look at all the bad things that happened to him. There's no record of him complaining, griping, or anything. Because when time came for him to get revelation, he got it, bing, bing. And you don't get that kind of revelation unless you're walking with God and looking to God. That showed that he had some kind of spiritual activity going on in his brain, that he was trusting God and he had the Spirit of God upon him. God was with him. That's why he prospered. So in spite of everybody else treating him badly, he knew to look to God. And that's what I encourage you all to do. And that's what I try to do. So he turned his face to the wall, verse 2, and prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, Lord, O Lord, remember how I walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done all which is good. I've done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, afore Isaiah was gone out into the middle court, that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Turn again, and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears, behold, I will heal thee. On the third day shalt thou go up unto the house of the Lord, and I will add unto thy days 15 years, and I will deliver thee in this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city for mine own sake, and for my servant David's sake. And Isaiah said, now this is again revelation, because it makes no sense to me why else it would be. Maybe there's a medical effect. Isaiah said, take a lump of figs. And they took and laid it on the boil, and he recovered. Maybe there was some medical effect of a lump of figs. I have no idea. But that was the revelation. Isaiah said it, they did it, and he got better. And Hezekiah said unto Isaiah, what shall be the sign that the Lord will heal me, that I shall go up into the house of the Lord the third day? And Isaiah said, this sign shalt thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he hath spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or back 10 degrees? Hezekiah answered, it's a light thing for the shadow to go down 10 degrees. Nay, but let the shadow turn backwards 10 degrees. And Isaiah the prophet cried unto the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down in the dial of Ahaz. How do you have a sundial go back 10 degrees? Did God move the earth? Did he pick up the whole universe and turn it around? Did he just take the sun and flip it backwards? No idea. But that's God. And anytime you think you got things figured out and you're going to tell God and everybody else what they ought to do, think of this. See, this doesn't scare me or upset me. It just reminds me God is really, really big and really, really powerful and really, really smart. So I'm not going to worry about it. Okay, Daniel 2. I'm going to read one quick one to wrap up here, and then we're going to give you a break. Ezekiel, Daniel. Chapter 2. Verse 1. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, this is the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and the sleep break from him. Then the king commanded, this is very similar to what the king of Egypt did, he commanded to call the magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, and Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, or Aramaic, which was the language they spoke in Babylon. O king, live forever, tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. So they said, you tell me what the dream is, and I'll tell you what it means. Which means, they wanted the king to tell them the dream, and they were going to make up some highfalutin answer. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show me the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we'll show the interpretation thereof. The king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you'll not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show the interpretation thereof. Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it's a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was angry and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain, because they were considered to be among the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. So he didn't get the revelation immediately. Remember, Joseph got it right away. Now, of course, Joseph knew what the dream was because the king told him, but he had the revelation immediately. But Joseph needed time. And Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known unto Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, otherwise known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning the secret that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. So you see how God works differently? Joseph, he just got the revelation and he knew.
Has left the conference.
He just got the revelation and he knew, but in this point, Daniel got together with his three buddies, they prayed, and then he got a night vision that night. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for his wisdom and might are his. He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings, setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast made me wisdom and might, given me wisdom and might. and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast made known unto us the king's matter. And therefore he goes in, and he goes through the whole dream and the meaning of it. And then verse 46, then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation, offering sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets. See, now couldst reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man, gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So again, very similar to Joseph, Daniel got the revelation to explain the king's dreams, but in a different way. Instead of getting revelation immediately on the spot, as it appears Joseph did, he had to pray with his friends and wait till the middle of the night. But then the result was very similar. The king accepted it and promoted him. And I don't think he got promoted quite as high as Joseph. Later on, he does get promoted to where he's basically the prime minister, but he's definitely promoted high in the government, and God takes care of him. And again, he was taken as a slave. He could have complained, he could have griped, but instead he trusted God, and God blessed him. So we will take a break now for 15 minutes. It's 3:17. Let's try to be back right around 3:30, 13-minute break, and we'll continue on and get through as much of it as we can.